Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about the formation of a former golf course near Broadhead into a conservation area. And our guest, local ecologist Steve Applebaum. Steve is the founder and executive director of Applied Ecological Institute. It's an environmental consulting firm and very active in getting this whole project underway and onto fruition. And as we talk with him, if you're a golfer, have you had a favorite golf course close or just a golf course close in your area? Wonder what replaced it? How would you feel about hiking trails and maybe sustainable crops on former golf courses? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Steve Applebaum, welcome back. Good to have you with us again. It's been a while.
It has been. Nice seeing you again, Larry, and I look forward to the conversation.
Well, this golf course, the Decatur Lake Golf Course, went up for sale in 2017, and that course has a long history. It opened in 1926, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And why did it close? And give us a little history of this whole process.
Well, my understanding, not being a golfer, my understanding is that as beautiful as the front nine of the course was, the back nine was a little less accessible and not quite as desirable to play. It was mostly earth-moved and constructed, creating bunkers and that sort of thing. But the front nine that we purchased, about 57 acres, was oak savanna with about three quarters of a mile of river and lake frontage on the Sugar River and Decatur Lake, very beautiful landforms. But what apparently was happening is the owners for about a decade had not invested in upgrading the facility itself. The kitchen, the restaurant were not upgraded, may not have been even remotely meeting code.
Yeah.
So the other understanding that I've come to is that the entire golf behavior is changing, moving toward where I'm told millennials are moving toward Top Golf and not walking around on a golf course like we, have
like
done.
Like we traditionally have done.
Right.
But one story I read, Dennis McCann, I think, had a story in the Golfer.
Yeah,
Wisconsin golfer, about a couple of women playing, and they knew the place was going to be sold and so forth.
Well, my partner in life, Susan Lenhart, and her friend Meredith Tripp were walking across the other side of the river looking back at the golf course.
Ah.
And Meredith mentioned to Susan that a golf course was for sale and maybe we should get some people together and have a discussion about buying and protecting it. And that's what they did. And they of course, had motivations to use it as a nature center or something of that nature. And then to also use it as a place to bring into, illuminate the opportunity to talk about clean water and restoration of the Sugar River, which is what this golf course abuts. So they gathered a group of us that included Ted O'Dell, the Gorilla Cookie originator, who owned 6.5 acres abutting. And this used to be his family's original land-grant farm. And he had been trying for his whole life to try to figure out how to get it back and protect it. So Susan and Meredith had a great idea. And that great idea turned into a purchase agreement within a couple weeks. And we principled the purchase agreement with what we wanted to accomplish and what we would not attempt to do. And that, 10 principles of conservation and economic development that were all aligned with conservation and doing good and giving back to the land and the people of the community.
Yeah. How'd the community respond?
Well, initially, there was a vocal minority that were, golfers that were really uncertain about what was going to happen. And then when they heard it was a bunch of conservationists that purchased it, they probably were even more concerned. What we did is we planted the entire golf course to sunflowers for the first year, everything but the oak savannas and the floodplain wetland areas. And we found that thousands of people came out to experience the beauty of the sunflowers on that gorgeous landform, including many of the golfers.
Sure.
The next thing we did was we had open houses and had listening sessions and talked about our ambitions and told them we were open-minded, which we were. We just wanted to adhere to our principles to protect and restore. But it didn't mean that there couldn't be some sort of play areas. But free food and a bunch of gatherings seemed to really help motivate people to think differently. And most have become, by far, supporters.
You bet. How difficult is it to restore an area treated for decades for golf purposes?
Well, the biggest challenge was that they had been using 34,000 pounds of fertilizer per year on the entire golf course, so about half of that on the front nine. And when we sampled the soils, there were excessive levels of phosphorus and nitrogen. So part of the reason for the sunflower crop was we took off 28,000 pounds of sunflower seed that we sold and gave away for bird seed that for the next 2 or 3 years. We also took about 80,000 pounds of stalks off, and that removed considerable percentage of the phosphorus. We were able to knock the phosphorus down by nearly a third in the soil, and then we immediately planted prairie, savanna, and wetlands without disturbing the soil. So all we needed was a plan, which we put together quickly, and we needed to implement that on cue before the weeds took over, and that was the primary task. And we need to raise funds to do that, which we did very quickly.
Yeah. Has the area lost tax revenue since the reserve replaced the golf course?
I don't think that's an issue because the food and beverage service is taxed. And the food and beverage service, rather than the golf play, was the primary tax-generating opportunity that the golf course represented. You know, the real estate taxes were very, very low because it was taxed as agricultural land. So food and beverage generated the tax revenue, and that'll still generate the tax revenue.
So it's still, they haven't lost, the community hasn't lost tax revenue, basically, then?
I'm not aware of any evidence of a loss of revenue. You know, we're transitioning and building back up. Food and beverage service is about to start up in earnest, so that revenue will grow.
Actually grow. So talk about the setting up of this preserve. I was kind of intrigued. I thought, oh, it was interesting that you use the cart paths you turned those into trails for hiking.
Yes, we decided to use the cart, rather than disturbing and landforming and grading new trails, we used the existing cart paths as the trails, and they serve double duty as the fire breaks for prescribed burning that's done on the property. We had a couple of legacy issues to deal with there. We had asphalt cart paths, and they were degraded and broken up. So we had to remove the asphalt cart paths, and we planted the what was underneath those, the existing original soil system, with grass and wildflowers alongside. So it's actually quite attractive in its renewed condition.
Yeah, and wide enough area for groups to walk or people to walk. And
yeah, I was surprised how wide the cart paths were. In many places, they're 8 feet wide. Yeah. I thought, you know, don't you go one direction, single file, you know, like a one-way road? But apparently they made the cart paths so that carts could pass in both directions in many locations on the trails.
Yeah, it's typically somebody loses a club at a hole, or they have to turn around and go back and get it, or there's somebody out selling pop or beer or whatever in a separate cart. They would need some space.
Yeah, they had a beer cart that serviced the alcohol license on the whole property, but I thought it was, if somebody needed to make a mad dash to go back to the clubhouse to use the bathroom, I had no idea.
Steve Applebaum, our guest today, we're talking with him about the project that he undertook along with a lot of people to have this golf course, the Decatur Lake Golf Course, at least the front nine, turned into a wonderful environmental, ecologically sound area for people in the entire community and beyond to enjoy. Questions or comments about this, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Joel Patnod, by the way, is our producer today. Jeff Robbins, our technical director. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here visiting with Steve Applebaum, who is the founder and executive director, senior ecologist for Applied Ecological Institute, an environmental consulting firm. And we're talking about the change from a golf course to a conservation area and farm-to-table operation. If you have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org, and we'd love to hear from you. I'm wondering, before we go to the phones, how are managers of the reserve working perhaps with local farmers?
There's a couple of ways. The initial sunflower planting that made friends out of adversaries and made better friends out of friends, that was planted by Nick Fassler, Fassler Farms, harvested, combined by Nick. And then we had Amish farmers involved in cleaning the sunflower seed and bagging it for bird seed. And then we actually had other farmers, the Reamer Family Farms and others involved. We pressed about 5,000 pounds of sunflower seeds and made a potable for human consumption sunflower oil. And Reamer's pigs just loved the pressings. The oil was bottled and sold and given away as a gift. So and then Chef John Marks and Chef Annie George are using local production, vegetables, meat, you know, fruit,
keeping
to the degree
local.
Possible. Trying.
As much as they can. Conrad in Delavan, let's go to you. Thank you for calling.
Hello, how are you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, just to laud the work of all those workers in acquiring that land. I know that's a beautiful area. I live about 45 minutes away. And I've used the bike trail that goes from Broadhead out that way and the Decatur area, just a phenomenal, beautiful area. So to have more access and work with the community is wonderful. So I've got probably two or three part question here. If you could address any volunteerism to help your cause out in your area, you know, I'd love to visit and bring the family out and let other people know. And then in Lake Geneva, it concerns me a lot. Maybe you're aware of the golf course out there that closed maybe 10 years ago. And I've heard there's been a lot of talk and about buying up the land and developing it. And it's such a beautiful area. And they've converted probably a third of the golf course into a disc golf area. So hopefully that's permanently left that way. But it adds to Lake Geneva. As you know, it's been so overdeveloped. And you wonder, hey, what do people do in Lake Geneva? So hopefully that area will not be built on because they have such big oaks and trees and beautiful area there. I think once people walk the area, they discover that's worth billions of dollars compared to all this revenue they think they'll bring in. If they destroy the golf course, they'll have nothing left.
Yeah.
So if you could just address those couple of areas and I'll
sure. Thank you. Thanks, Conrad, for calling. And, you know, there's a fair amount of money in Lake Delavan, but go ahead and talk.
Well, the answer regarding volunteerism, absolute opportunities, everything from getting involved in the training for volunteers to implementing volunteer activities, from native seed harvesting, invasive plant control, prescribed burning training and management. There's a BioBlitz if you're interested in working with a bunch of ologists, so botanists, zoologists. There's a BioBlitz that's coming up in a few weeks. You can go to the Lower Sugar River Watershed Association website and get your kids involved in learning how to identify everything from fish to plants. With regard to, I'm very familiar with the Lake Geneva Golf Course along Route 50 that's been shut down for about 12 years now. We actually were hired by a conservation group to look at an alternative plan for that. My understanding is it's tied up in litigation or trust litigation. It's not protected, and it has had several full development plans for the entire site, but I do not know the status currently of that golf course.
Yeah, you'd think there, you know, if there were the people that live around Geneva Lake, there's a fair amount of money there. You might think that some of those folks would be interested in maybe having something like you've got going in Decatur, at the Decatur Lake.
Well, the reason the Wisconsin Golfing Association editor, Dennis, who you mentioned, McCann, we got him and them involved immediately to share what we were doing at the Decatur Lake Golf Course. And he wrote three articles about what we were doing, and it certainly seemed like an alternative that was very feasible, practical, and a way to keep that wonderful, beautiful land as a part of, you know, vital part of the legacy of the community, rather than losing it to a trailer park or whatever the future was or could have been.
Jim in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to tell, and the former caller might be interested in this. I've gone down to Tucson quite a bit to visit family over the years. And in Oro Valley, which is a Tucson suburb, there's a golf course called the Vistosa Golf Course that went belly up, I want to say, maybe 10 years ago. And neighbors in the community, and working with the conservation fund, acquired and converted it to 202 acres of open space. And it's just a beautiful asset to the community. Oro Valley, like much of Tucson, isn't too short on golf courses. But in open space like this, they're quickly getting filled in. So it might be an interesting part of people to investigate that, see what it did to home values, see what it did to the tax base, just see how the economics of it turned out.
Yeah.
Because I know that's probably important to the local community.
Yeah, Jim, thanks a lot for calling. And Steve, you were nodding. You're familiar with that.
Yeah, we actually were involved in that with another golf course in the Tucson and Phoenix area and elsewhere in Texas. And usually the economics is very favorable for home appraisals within usually a five-minute walk of those facilities. When they close down, the value actually increases, the appraisal, because if it's protected, unlike a golf course that has an uncertain future always, potentially redeveloped, as soon as it's protected, the value typically goes up 10 to 50% in appraisal within a five-minute walk.
That's something. Jim, thank you so much for calling. Thomas in Manitowoc, we'll go to you. Hi, Thomas. Thank you for calling.
Yes, there's a golf course just north of Two Rivers, and it was kind of run down, and a individual purchased it, and they're turning it into a arboretum now. I wish I could tell you more about it. I'm not real knowledgeable on it, but I was wondering if your guest had heard about that. And there also was a golf course north of Port Washington a few years ago that all the residents in the area chipped in and bought it and turned it into wildlife habitat. So I'm really happy to hear what you're doing there. It sounds like you're doing a great job.
Thomas, thanks for calling. And again, you're nodding.
We worked on both of them. We worked on the master plan for the privately owned Two Rivers golf course. and a sculptural garden and an arboretum was what the master plan with the owner called for. And then the second one that was mentioned is a wildlife area now that was entirely planted for wildlife opportunities along the Lake Michigan shoreline.
Well, that's and were you involved in that one too?
Yeah, we were involved with both of them as designers, and then in the second one as a contractor to actually do some of the restoration work.
Maybe you should talk some more about your institute, because you know, you tell us how you're involved.
Let me clarify. The institute is not the consulting firm.
Right.
Starting in 1975, I started a business called Applied Ecological Services. I retired from that business 2 years ago and set up this nonprofit institute. So now I'm a volunteer 100% of my time, and I'm just trying to give back and do good projects and work with others of the same ilk around the world. And that's how the Three Waters Reserve came about. It had nothing to do with for-profit. It's entirely for generating nonprofit revenue for conservation and environmental education and so forth.
And the Decatur project is fully funded, if I'm not mistaken.
We have for a three-year-old organization, we got several million dollars in endowment and funding and benefactors that have committed to more than double that. So we're on track with that and some other funding streams, including Gorilla Cookies that we can talk about whenever you want, Larry, to continue growing the opportunity to generate revenue for conservation.
Good. Amazing. Jason and Cudahy, your turn. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, hey, I just think it's great what you're doing. And, I'm on my way up to Sheboygan right now, and I just kind of was thinking about the Kohler Andre Park and how they've been talking for the past, it seemed like, you know, I don't know, 5 years or longer, you know, about taking a portion of that park to turn it into a golf course. And I just thought it was crazy that they're doing that. When you have such a beautiful park up there, it seems, you know, such a valuable asset, you know, for the community and for the state. And I just don't get why they want to, you know, take a portion of that and turn it into a golf course when, you know, there's already a golf course just right down the road in Sheboygan. And then you got the Whistling Straits and all the, you know, great golf course up there. I just don't get why they're, you know, trying to take that.
Steve, comment.
I think providing a practical, feasible, cost-effective, and, you know, alternative would be worth thinking about. And usually a locally preferred alternative that could be brought to the attention of the Kohler family or others, you know, can change the trajectory.
Yeah, and the thinking.
Right.
Perhaps about it. Jason, thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us the email address ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Michael emailed to ask if the farm-to-table operation is an organic farm. What did it take to make the transition, since many courses get heavy chemical treatment? You addressed that a little bit, but you could talk some more about that.
Yeah, the commitment to locally produced as available high-quality food is fundamental to what Chef John Marks, who runs Culinary Nirvana, which is the company that we've leased the food and beverage service to. We've got a strong commitment to, absolute commitment to healthy food and healthy people and, you know, healthy environment. It's challenging finding quality and quantity of organic, and even more rigorously produced would be regenerative.
Yeah.
Because what we've learned is not all organic operations, while they might meet the letter of the law, doesn't necessarily mean it's as good as it can be to regenerate ecosystems and biodiversity and not just produce healthy food. So that's what Chef John Marks is focused on doing. If you're interested in food and that sort of philosophy behind it, check out Culinary Nirvana and check out what we're doing at Three Waters Reserve.
Yeah, and the chemical treatment part of it, you addressed that a little, but talk some more about that.
Well, other than some chemicals that we had to use to start the restoration process on the golf course, we're really, really steering clear of chemical uses. You know, after nearly 98 years of and about 50 years of that being chemical-induced vegetation management and maintained systems, we're converting to prescribed burning and converting to mowing and other forms of management of the land itself, which was heavily chemically subsidized for, you know, at least 50 years. The food, we're working with local farmers that are regenerative and organic farmers. We're also having to, unfortunately, buy food that isn't because of some food that isn't available sufficiently, seasonally or in quantity for what we need at the facility.
So talk more about the facility. What kinds of events or things are going to happen there?
The facility, the Three Waters Reserve, refers to the whole property, and the facility there is the whole property. It includes the former restaurant and pro shop. The pro shop, which was downstairs from the upstairs restaurant, is now a field station. There's an executive director, Aaron Swan, that's been hired, and there's a volunteer nonprofit group that's organized by the Lower Sugar River Watershed Association. And what they're doing is organizing the events and education, outreach and training for, you know, conservation and restoration opportunities. The BioBlitz that I mentioned a few minutes ago is their sponsorship. The upstairs is the restaurant facility, and the type of events that we've had, weddings have been occurring there, more so in the future. There's been a celebration of life or two. There's been regional conservation think tank meetings looking at what to do about the Driftless area, challenges there, what to do about regional water quality, all sorts of events. If you go on the Southern Wisconsin Land Conservancy and Three Waters Reserve websites, you'll see the event calendar. They just had an eclipse party, which I thought would be, you know, I thought it was going to get washed out with clouds. And those 60 or 70 people showed up for food and beverages and to celebrate astronomy and our place in the galaxy.
Oh, man. Well, you mentioned Ted O'Dell earlier, who gifted a piece of, well, his property.
Yeah.
Because it abutted. And he invented gorilla cookies, which you brought me one to chew on. Talk about, what's the history of gorilla cookies?
Well, I have a personal history. I'm not a big sweets or a cookie eater, and a girlfriend of mine, when I was in college at the University of Illinois in the 70s, would stop at the store and buy a 3-pack or a 5-pack. I don't even know what it was. And I don't ever remember even trying them back then. When I moved to Wisconsin in 1980, I met Ted O'Dell. There was a cadre of people in the Broadhead, Monroe, Judah area that were prairie lovers. So we started the Prairie Enthusiasts, a group of us. And Ted was one of those people. And after learning about his history, trying to become a rower and trying to build bicycles and finding his place in baking cookies and making granola, I got to know him better and eventually got to know that this golf course was his family original land-grant farm in the 1800s. and that he wanted to get it back so very badly and protect it. When it came up for sale, we made an offer on it, and the first person I talked to outside of our immediate group was Ted, to see if he would have interest. And he said, I'm in. This is a dream come true. As part of him participating, he contributed to the funding to buy the land. And then he said, you know, this is just amazing. I've been trying to figure out what to do with my gorilla cookie recipe. I don't trust that it would find its way into good hands. He was a Luddite and very, very, you know, very, very introverted, and he didn't want to be taken advantage of. So he gifted the gorilla cookie, the original recipe, to
us. Which he had never given to anyone else.
No, and we've accepted it, you know, signed in blood, and, you know, we've accepted it, and it's only being used as a part of the overall mission of Three Waters Reserve and to raise money for conservation purposes. So what you're eating right
delicious.
Now, Larry, that is the original recipe. And chefs Annie George and John Marks at Three Waters Reserve, I thought us scientists knew how to really explore what was factual. And but they've done forensics on, you know, Ted gave us the recipe, he gave us the formula where he'd mix 200 pounds of this and that together, but he also gave us the core of the recipe, but he didn't tell us what brand of flour and what, you know, sugar he used. It just said sugar. And Annie George, chefs Annie George and John Marks have done phenomenal forensics to actually look at old photographs that show the bags of flour and show the sugar type. And they've gone well beyond anything I ever thought was possible to construct what you're eating right now.
God, which, it's delicious. And there were seeds. I mean, there are, I'm tasting different seeds in there.
I can't tell you what they are. Sorry, Larry.
But you can give me an example of one, let's say, that I mean, they're native seeds, are they not?
Not in this version of the original gorilla cookie, but what we've also got is we've gone through the FDA process to actually allow us to use several native prairie grass seeds to make flour. And so long live durable perennial native grasses that have been on this land for, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10,000 years. We are going to, as soon as we have adequate supply of flour, make a new gorilla cookie that we're calling the climate food. It's part of a climate food branded new food line that we've set up with the former chairman of Whole Foods for 23 years. And then that will be introduced as the new gorilla cookie line, and it'll be made out of these native prairie grass seed.
Oh, it is delicious. And so their profits from that go to conservation.
Profits from revenue beyond break even.
Yeah, revenue, you know, beyond break even.
The chef and the operating costs of the facility contribute to some number that's the break even number, and anything above that is for conservation, education, restoration, scholarships, and a range of other things. Science work that's being done. So the gorilla cookie, you're the first person that I'm aware of since early 90s, when he shut down his Quercus bakery in Oregon, Wisconsin, as I understand it. You're the first person to actually taste the original, real recipe, absolute, robust, you know, forensically determined.
Well, it is delicious. I'm telling you that for sure. So, in terms of the Three Waters Reserve, where are you now? I mean, it's been like 6 years or so. Can people get out there?
It's open to the public year round. There's trails that people can walk on. There's calendar of events that people can attend. There's opportunities for volunteerism. There's opportunities to get involved, as both on the instructor side and the student side, to learn there. There's a big river attached to it that's attached to a big watershed.
Yeah.
It covers 43% of the U.S., you know, the Mississippi River. There's an opportunity to think big and to do big. And, you know, the fingers that are developing into the farming community, you know, the farmers of the Sugar River have had their meetings at this facility. This past weekend, the Sand County Foundation and American Bird Conservancy had 50 or 60 oak woodlot owners that came together there to learn about oak savannas and oak forests and see right on the property, see a restored savanna that has remarkable rare plants that have come back. And it was mowed for 98 years. And see right across the fence a highly degraded savanna. So the opportunity to use this as a teaching facility, to use it for family events and for, you know, regional events, that's what this facility is for.
What's the, and we'll post the website, I'm sure Joel probably already has done this, up on our ideas at WPR.org/Larry. If you go to today's program and click on the comments on the copy, you'll get a link. But what is where do we go to find the information?
I haven't actually looked it up yet, but it's on the cards I gave you, Southern Wisconsin Land Conservancy and Three Waters Reserve. And then the institute I'm now a part of is called Applied Ecological Institute, and they all have websites.
Yeah, they all have websites. It's pretty easy. I think if you type in Three Waters Reserve,
yeah,
it's going to pop up. Well, you're doing some fantastic work. And, you know, I in that article, that one of the articles Dennis McCann wrote, he mentioned that there were, I think in the recent years, about 20 golf courses in Wisconsin have gone out of business.
That's right. Yep.
I know one of them, because I played on it, in Watertown, but that's turned into, gone back to farmland.
Yeah.
Traditional farmland. But there are others out there, too.
Yeah, with the change from traditional golf, if that's mm-hmm. what you call what the course used to be, to Top Golf, there's a lot of, I figured in three states here in the Midwest at the time we purchased this and then gifted it to the Southern Wisconsin Land Conservancy.
Yeah.
It's fully protected now, by the way, so it's never going to be developed. There was 18 courses that had just gone under within the past 3 months. And then Dennis McCann sent me a list of 17 courses just in Wisconsin that had fallen. But there was 14 to 20,000 acres of golf course in the three-state area that I looked at that had gone belly up. So a tremendous opportunity to do conservation. Many of them were in urban or exurban locations, just ideal properties for golf could still be a part of it. Maybe it's not an 18-hole or a 27-hole. Yeah. Maybe it's a 4-hole or a whatever.
9-hole or whatever.
Right.
Well, Steve, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. And, you know, it's been a long time since we got together, so we have to make it not so far apart between visits.
I look forward to that, Larry.
Thank you so much. Steve Applebaum is the founder, executive director, and senior ecologist for Applied Ecological Institute, an environmental consulting firm. He's based in Broadhead, Wisconsin. It was great to talk with him. And I tell you what, I'm really glad to have the opportunity to eat one of those gorilla cookies. They are delicious. Well, coming up, we're going to switch gears and talk about some psychoactive products that are being sold in Wisconsin. Delta 8 is one that comes to mind. And there's some questions about the use of these products. So we'll hear about that next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR.